Mrajuhtuden.
Mrajuhtuden.
Sober as... Sober... Sober... Sober as...
Welcome to the Anonymous Eskimo Project, a program devoted to bringing hope to those struggling with mental health issues and addiction. Through candid conversations with guests about mental health issues, addiction, and sobriety, we can let those who are struggling know that they are not alone. I am your host, Ralph Sara. On this show, I have Kesik Whiskey Jack. Kesik is originally from the Saddle Lake Cree Nation, but now resides in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Kesik is a former board member of the Edmonton Two-Spirit Society. They have a background in youth work and frontline from high-risk populations. Huia is pursuing a bachelor's in education. They are also a member of the Indigia House of Beaver Hills, which is a local Indigenous drag troupe of Two-Spirit performance artists. Kesik has been sober for 4.5 years, and on this show, they courageously share their story for those who are still struggling. So guys, please help me welcome Kesik Whiskey Jack. Hi, Kesik. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. Good. Kesik, can you go ahead and introduce yourself so our listeners can get to know you?
Okay. Dante Kakiana Wagmaganak, Unitsikis Kwapuinikutinia, Kesik Netigasan, Egwamaga Awigiana Maskutinuskaiganik. So my name is Kesik Whiskey Jack in the Nehiya language, that's Plains Cree, traditional here in Treaty 6 territory. Colonially known as Alberta. I'm originally from Satellite Cree Nation, and I currently reside in Edmonton.
Can you let everybody know how many or how much time of sobriety you've had?
Sure. So I have 4.5 years clean. I started my recovery journey back in 2013 with a few slips here and there. So, you know, relapse is definitely a normal part of recovery. And this December, it'll be 5 years.
Oh my gosh, congratulations, 5 years, so awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So what did things look like before you got sober?
Definitely bankrupt in all aspects of my life, mentally, physically, spiritually, emotionally, financially. Definitely a dark place to be, and I wouldn't recommend, you know, going down that path. However, I know it's more often than not normal. Due to like residual effects of colonization and intergenerational trauma in the community, the family, and self. I know the healing journey isn't an easy one, but it's more simple than we think. And that's not to say like it's been challenging, because I'm just grateful to be where I am today.
Can you let us know what the drinking culture is like over there?
Well, I'm part of not only the Indigenous community, but the queer community as well. So I would say it's fairly rampant in both. So to be a part of either one, just like being Two-Spirit in general, higher chances of, you know, risk of addiction. So, I mean, locally here in Edmonton, it's really all about who you surround yourself with. And when I first got into recovery, it was definitely lonely for the most part, because I had to leave a lot of my old friends, quote unquote, you know, behind. And for the first few months, started going to the recovery meetings, and one of them was Walbriety, a 12-step program for Indigenous people. And one of my previous sponsors who'd recently passed is where I met a lot of my friends in recovery now. I mean, mind you, I turn to culture and spirituality more so and lean on that for my spiritual side of growing and the healing journey. But, you know, being in sober living, it's one of my requirements to go to 12-step meetings again, because I just moved back from my home community last week.
Oh, sober living. So can you let us know a little bit about that?
So sober living situation, it's with the Oxford House Foundation. I think it had it started in the States back in the 70s or something like that. And anyways, it's one of the local sober living situations here that I never knew about in my active addiction. And if I knew about it prior to me like relapsing and all that, you know, aftercare is such an important part of recovery. It's a safety net. You're surrounded by people who are on the same journey, trying to live a good life. I know some of my friends call it the red road. It's pretty like straight and narrow path, but the house that I'm in is actually an Indigenous house with the Oxford. And there's also houses in Calgary, just south here of Alberta. I like it. I have like four roommates. They have general guidelines, you know, keeping the house clean as one goes when living a good life, like trying to keep. I'm actually spending, before I got on this call, cleaning my space.
That's very cool. An Indigenous house. Oh, man. I wish that would happen everywhere. You know, man, that's like one of my, when I was in treatment, you know, and one of the kind of the requirements before we commenced out of there was like, we'd have to find like a good clean space to be living. I mean, they wouldn't kind of let you out on the streets, you know. So there was some like men's sober houses that I heard of. Fortunately, I had a good place to go with my fiance not drinking and everything. But for a lot of Indigenous people that are going through treatment, they don't have a lot of resources after that. So, oh my gosh, that hearing that there is an Indigenous sober house over there is kind of encouraging, and I wish that would happen everywhere, you know.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like there's a few. There's Recovery Acres, Harmony House, Tim, or Jelinek House. Some of them are stricter than others with their house guidelines and rules. This one's more relaxed. So I chose this one for sure. And there's an Indigenous treatment center called Poundmakers Lodge that Oxford House recently collaborated with, and I guess that's how this Indigenous sober house came to be.
Wow, that's so cool. Yeah, culture is super important. Is that sober house, is there a lot of, you know, cultural practice and tradition like focused in that house?
Yeah, so when I first moved in 2018, I was like, you know, lighting up my smudge, my sage, and the guy that runs the houses or like takes care of them came one day and thought it smelled like marijuana. He thought I was like smoking weed in the house.
But, oh, yeah.
I think a few years down the road, they actually have a smudging altar in the living room now. So that's cool. And when, in terms of like culture, they allow, it's one of their policies, like to attend 2 meetings a week in the 12-step program or anything that helps with your recovery, right? You know, the guys meet once a week just to check in, air any concerns with each other. And that's basically how we're able to make everything work. Ceremony and culture is actually considered, you know, one of those meetings that we're able to attend. So there's an option there.
Yeah. And it is so important to not have like those certain lines that separate mental health and, you know, sobriety, and because they're all interrelated. And I think people are starting to realize that, you know, people working on their mental health and their sobriety, the stigma that goes along with both of those are kind of double, you know, it's kind of a double hit. And once people realize that if we're working on mental health and mental health issues are kind of the reason people are using substances to cope with it in an unhealthy way, maybe we could start to heal other people, you know. Information is key.
Especially in the context of culture and ceremony. I know some traditionals who are very adamant about, you know, not being under the influence of any mind or mood altering substances for at least 4 days. But there are those who are pretty relaxed in their approach and allowing who they come into their ceremonies, because there are some people of the mind that don't take it upon themselves to decide whether or not they need that ceremony in that time and space that they're in, because sometimes those are the people who need it the most.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even think of that. Yeah, sometimes people are excluded But sometimes those people are the ones that are hurting the most, you know.
Yeah. Because I work frontline with, you know, my background is with youth care and high-risk populations. And there are some queer communities who are on the streets. And that's what they turn to is drugs and alcohol. But sometimes they do need access to the culture and ceremonies. And it's really nice having connections with elders who are able to allow those who need it most into the ceremonies when they need it.
So you mentioned Wellbriety. Can you elaborate on that? And if somebody hasn't heard of that before, can you kind of explain it?
Yeah, so it's a 12-step program with an Indigenous focus, as opposed to the linear approach going from one step to the 12th step in the program. It's guided by spiritual principles. So in the readings, it says that the elders who are in that, like the AA programs, NA programs, when they started over 100 years ago, that there were similarities to the way, you know, the Indigenous worldview and approach to life. It aligns with our natural law, with those spiritual principles. And so instead of a linear approach, they put it into a circle so that when you reach a 12th step, you can do another set on any other issues that you're facing throughout your recovery process. And they did this ceremony with, you know, the four nations of the world. We'll call them races, like the yellow, the black, the white, and, you know, the red people. So they got people from Norway, the reindeer herders, their ceremonial people of Asian descent, and the black people who worked with water ceremonies. And then, like, the Indigenous people here of North America, they got 25 feathers from their sacred birds from around the world, and they put it on this sacred hoop. So they bring this hoop to different areas across Turtle Island, or known as North America, and it offers a path to healing through forgiveness. So if you go up to it and touch it, and that's one of my sponsors' dreams, my late sponsor. He wanted to bring that hoop to the community here, bring it down downtown in the ICE district where Boyle Street is and the high-risk populations are, like the homeless, to do a march with that hoop down that way. And it's still in discussions with people here in the recovery community locally to, you know, bring that vision to life and host like a 3 or 4 day healing camp.
How are you living your life in sobriety nowadays? How do you like practice your sobriety?
I would say right now I'm following my heart. So recently I got into artistic expression through the form of drag. So in 2020, just before the pandemic hit, I found my passion because, you know, it involved hair, makeup, fits, design, styling, all those different aspects of being an artist, and performing it, you know, tapping into the feminine side of myself. And for me, in relation to culture, I think it's definitely helping me deal with my emotions. Now that my mental health is in check, I can focus a little more on the emotional side of things. Yeah.
So doing things that you enjoy doing is helping you a lot then.
Yeah, following my heart. So I think there's a saying, the longest journey in life or the hardest journey is, you know, making the connection from here, and the other would point to their head to here, and then they'll point to their heart. Oh. And, you know, hearing it at first is kind of like, okay, what do they mean? So it's kind of finding your own understanding of making your, I guess, mental, your thoughts and your emotions work in alignment for whatever it is that you want. And I think once you're able to tap into that power, like, you just become unstoppable.
Oh. Was there a time where you were ashamed of, you know, things that you liked or how you wanted to express yourself?
Oh, for sure. Even now, like, I think in the sober living situation, it'd be awesome to have a two-spirit-specific sober house, just because I think of the comfort level of, we'll call them the cis hetero guys, like cisgender. It's just normal for them, and I don't want to weird them out just by me expressing and being myself. But there's also a certain level of safety. And for my own personal journey, I definitely had to go through my own internalized homophobia, transphobia, you know, being conditioned by the mainstream society that, you know, a guy has to be a certain way, and getting over that part. And then also, you know, tapping into the feminine, where I express myself by wearing makeup or lashes and putting on a wig and hair and all that. So,
you know, when people talk about the recovery community, it always seems like it's, oh, it's recovery community. Even myself, you know, is so helpful and so good. You can always find somebody that has an answer for something, you know, or some advice for something. But, you know, just hearing you, it brings up the reality that even in recovery communities, there's some sort of judgment or some sort of discrimination.
Well, I think being a good judgment of character, you know, keeping an open mind and heart for those who are kind, have a good message. I mean, even for the people I assume I don't like, I agree with some of the stuff that they speak about. But it's not just talk, it's also how you walk. It's like practice what you preach, right? So if you're saying one thing, doing another, it doesn't really align, then I'm not gonna associate myself with you, right? And as a result, like, my circle has become pretty small. And for me, at this point in my recovery, it's definitely quality over quantity.
Yeah, and some of those boundaries that you set and bring your circle closer are really needed, though.
Totally. So if I have friends who have really good, healthy, strong boundaries, it sets a standard. If it's a high bar, then this is what I expect. And to take it a step even further, like, it's not just expectations, they're now requirements.
Yeah, a lot of times people don't understand that the boundaries we set are actually needed. You know, for a lot of people, some people don't have boundaries, and that's how, you know, relapses occur, or, you know, going back to drinking or using drugs occur. But if you're in recovery, you got to learn your boundaries. I guess at first my boundaries were really, really strict like yours. But, you know, I started to, like, I play music, right? And so I sometimes play at bars and at weddings that serve alcohol and functions that serve alcohol. But before, when I first was in early recovery, I would say absolutely not. You know, so in people's recovery, seems like it's always changing. It's never, you know, one set thing.
Yeah, agreed.
When you got into or were thinking about getting into sobriety or recovery, like, was it very difficult? And what were your biggest challenges?
When I started experimenting, I was like a year in, and I was like, you know, telling myself pretty hard on myself, you know, I'm better than this. I never thought that this was where my life would end up. Did I really become this person that I told myself I'd never be, right? It was maybe a year to 18 months in, I decided to go to treatment in 2012, stayed sober for 8 months, relapsed, went back. And I was just making decisions in my recovery that weren't conducive to my recovery, like surrounding myself with people who are still in active addiction, because it only becomes a matter of time before you fall off again. And I definitely went to about 5 treatment centers over the years. And at one point, it just got to the point where relapse became normal. And I was like, I already learned this in treatment. When I go on the path of recovery, I'll really apply myself then. So I stayed out for a few more years. And then finally, like 2018, went to treatment again, because I went to education, higher education, post-secondary, and that's what really got me to get together.
What do you think changed this last time in treatment?
Definitely wanting to do better for myself, having a meaningful life with purpose, and working to be a better person, just in general, a good human being. You know, giving back to society, to community, to family.
There's in my last treatment, the thing that changed me was talking to a clinician, because I never opened up to anybody before that, you know? And that's a hard thing to do.
I think therapy is something I definitely want to try, but I know there's a therapeutic value. It's like unparalleled going to recovery groups and the rooms, we call them, at these 12-step groups. But clinicians, you know, I hear good things about it, because you know, you're talking one-on-one with someone about deeper issues, and maybe that's something I've been talking about going into, but not really putting any effort in. Open to it though.
Yeah, the difference for me was, like, you know, before I was, you know, in native culture, you're taught not to talk about your, like, past traumas or things that are hurting you, you know, or even to cry. So just opening up to somebody, kind of just like let the hard things out a little bit, and it became easier to talk, and then you start to talk a little bit more. And I talked about things that I never told anybody, you know, things that hurt me before, things that I did when I was drinking that I could remember, you know. There's definitely a healing process when you're going through mental health issues, you know, opening up to other people and having the courage to do that. So what is one piece of advice you would give somebody that is thinking about getting sober?
I would offer one piece of advice is to remember that you're loved and you're never alone, even if it may feel that way. And to definitely let go of all of those people, places, and things in active addiction in order to surround yourself with a new set of people on the same path.
Yeah, definitely. When I was thinking about it, I always went to that thought, oh man, I'm never going to have fun again.
Oh my gosh, I love to party. I just do it sober.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll go out dancing. I'll crack a Red Bull. I mean, that's how I do it.
Yeah. Do you perform? Like you mentioned, you are...
I perform drag.
Yeah, drag. Because I know there's a place here that has shows, like weekly shows. Do you do that?
Yeah. Some of them are in bar settings, but I'm far enough in my recovery to be able to be in there, you know, just to put on a show.
Yeah.
Because it's a good side hustle. It pays well. It's actually holding me off until December, until I'm able to secure myself some employment to pay off the bills and adults.
Oh, so you get paid to do it?
Oh yeah, for sure. Like this month, I'm booked in the last 6 months out of the, and then that's why it'll hold me off until. So it gives me some time to like relax, chill, go inward, sit with myself.
Wow.
And focus on what I love to do most.
Wow, that's cool. Do you have a name?
Yeah, Cedar Tea. And I chose cedar because it's a good medicine. I love the way it smells, the teachings behind the positivity it brings into your life and energy shift. And then just tea, because it rewrites the narrative in the community, the queer community. Like when you spill tea, to me, that's like gossiping. And so instead of being laterally violent out here, just be kind. Because a lot of the queens, you know, if you're just newer, can be shady and, you know, talking about each other. And that's why I'm really choosy about which queens I associate with.
Oh, are some...
And it's usually the ones who are like winners. That act like winners, I guess.
Oh yeah, are some of them into like in recovery like you?
I mean, no. Well, there are some who like have had their experience with drugs and alcohol and just learned to stop on their own, or they do it in moderation.
Oh, I see.
Never got to that point of addiction yet.
Yeah. Now you say you're far along in your recovery that you can go into a bar to perform. Do you ever have any almost weak points where you think about
it? No. Well, I know that like if it gets to a point where the crowd is getting pretty lit and they start acting rowdy or I just not sensing good vibes, then I'll remove myself from that setting. But typically, I belong to like a drag troupe, and it's all Indigenous queer two-spirit drag performance artists. And our collective has been quite successful this year, getting booked in all Alberta, or like the major pride festivals in Calgary, Jasper, and beyond. Like, you know, there are a few that even went to Yellowknife. And a lot of us are in recovery, and we support each other that way.
Wow. How do you find you on like social media or your troupe?
Oh, it's Indigi House. So at INDIGIHAUZ. And we chose the letter Z just to switch it up.
Okay. Very cool. Man, that seems like something that you really enjoy. And that is really important to find in your recovery, to find something that you enjoy that is healthy and helps you, you know, express yourself.
And it's outside of the realms of like recovery groups as well. Like it's in the queer community, the arts community. It also raises two-spirit visibility, like Indigenous representation within the queer community. By having a community, it creates a sense of belonging. I hear a lot of good things from other house members. Like we started off with 5 members in 2020, and now we're up to 12 and continuing to recruit and grow and evolve. And those dynamics, like a family, come into play where we have conflict. And so we resort to culture to be able to have sharing circles. And we have an in-house elder, too, to be able to conduct them for us. So in case we need any resolution, that's the route we take.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Is there anything else you want to share before we end this?
Thank you for asking me to be a part of this. This is my first one, especially on the topic of recovery. I love opening up and sharing a bit of my experience, strength, and hope for anyone who can listen and maybe take something for themselves and hope to help them on their path.
Yeah, it's so amazing. I just got a message from one of a person that I've interviewed before, and they shared a screenshot of somebody reaching out to them and saying, hey, your story really helped me out, you know, being newly into recovery. And man, just when I get those messages or texts and shares, I just like, oh my God, this is actually working, you know?
Yeah, I love what you're doing. That's awesome. Especially like post-pandemic with like mixing in-person and online things. This is just one avenue that's proving effective.
Well, Kisak, thank you so much. And I know your story and your share is going to help somebody who is struggling. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that's all for today's show. I hope you, the listeners, found some inspiration, strength, and hope. Listen next week when I have another strong, courageous person on who is walking with us on this healing journey. This program is available as a podcast. You can hear this and many more episodes wherever you listen to podcasts or at anonymouseskimo.com. Join in the Anonymous Eskimo Project Mondays at 9:30 a.m. and again repeating at 5:30 p.m. on 91.3 KIDE, Hoopa Tribal Radio, serving Hoopa, California. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. Biura!
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.